Good morning, everybody, and thank you for coming to learn together this morning. I'm a little bit overwhelmed by how many people are here, and this is just for the sub. I can't imagine what it is for the real deal when you get Rav Schechter here. And I'm grateful to Rav Shai for giving me this opportunity to share Torah with you while he's out doing very, very important things for Klal Yisrael. By way of, I don't know if it's introduction or just by sort of gauging the room a little bit, there's been something that's been on my mind for the past few days that no matter what else I have going on in my life and no matter what else is happening, I just can't really get off of my mind, so I may refer back to it a few times. I just want to get a sense of how many people are in the same boat as me. So maybe by a show of hands, how many of you, if I say a name, just by a show of hands, if the name is meaningful to you, so I can get if this is just something, a me thing, or if this is an everybody thing. The name Ariel, the name Esther Tehila Bas Ariel Tzipora. Okay, so means something to many of you. Okay, so I'll explain what it means to me and why it's something that I haven't been able to really focus on much else in the past few days. Just to fill you in, I have a friend. I don't think he would consider me a close friend. You know, we certainly love to schmooze when we see each other, but I feel much closer to him than he feels to me because I hear him a lot, and I've been davening for his family every single day for a while. Whose daughter passed away this past Shabbos, a 9-year-old girl, and the Levaya was on Sunday in Boca Raton, Florida, where he is the associate rabbi, or the rabbi, I don't know what the exact titles are. Maybe Rabbi Goldberg is a senior rabbi and he's the regular rabbi, or he's a co-senior, I don't know how it works. I can't follow shul politics. I don't know where Rabbi Schechter is here, or Rabbi Axelrod is here. They're all rabbis, they're all good rabbis. Everyone's a good rabbi. So, the Levaya was on Sunday morning in Boca Raton, and I watched the Levaya. I couldn't watch it live because I had to say shir, but after shir and before the Super Bowl, which I didn't watch, I watched the Levaya in between. And since then, there's really been nothing else on my mind. So I apologize in advance if some of the things that I'm going to say are maybe overstepping, because like I said, it's not like Rabbi Moskowitz is my closest friend in the whole world, although, like I said, I feel very close to him. But I don't know, when people share Torah, when people share ideas, we often just go to what we've been thinking about. So I want to share with you three different ideas, independent ideas, all related to the parsha, all related to this week's parsha, and all related to Kabbalah HaTorah. And I think that each idea can have meaning for us in our lives, because my brain is in that place, each of these ideas in my head is connected to Esther Tehila Bas Ariel Tzipora. I think it's now Bas Gavriel Pinchas. Is that the name? I remember. Gavriel Pinchas. So I want to share with you three. They're independent ideas. You know, Rabbi Schechter is very, very good at making an hour-long shiur, you know, revolve around a single idea. I'm not so good at that. I run out of steam after about 15, 20 minutes, so we're just going to do like three separate mini shiurim, you know, three separate ideas that I don't think really are necessarily related to each other, other than the fact that they all revolve around Matan Torah. This week, Parshas Mishpatim is the Parsha of Matan Torah. It's the Parsha of Kabbalah HaTorah. That's it's a little surprising to people, because last week was the Aseres HaDibros. Parshas Yisro is the Aseres HaDibros. And my son Daniel told me that he heard from his Rebbe, Rav David Willig, that in Yerushalayim, a lot of times when they hang up, like in the yeshiva, a little petek that says, you know, we're going to be having a simcha, bar mitzvah, on such and such a date. So instead of writing the date, they say what parsha it is. But they don't name the parsha. They say the parsha of, you know, the parsha of Briyas HaOlam. And you know that means Parshas Bereishis. You know, the parsha of the Mabul, although that would be a strange way to advertise the simcha. You know, and you know that it's Parshas Noach. So someone put up a little note that said on the parsha of Kabbalah Satorah, and everyone showed up the wrong Shabbos. You know, everyone showed up Parsha Yisrael because that's when they thought the parsha of Kabbalah Satorah. The Kabbalah Satorah, Nasa V'Nishma, the famous words of Kabbalah Satorah of Nasa V'Nishma are in this week's parsha. It's in Parsha Mishpatim. It is not in Parsha Yisrael. So the Chazal have a lot to say about that particular phrase, Nasa V'Nishma. You know, the Jewish people seem to get a lot of credit for that phrase, for being able to have the wisdom, the courage, something to say that phrase, Nasa V'Nishma. The Gemara in Shabbos Taf Peches tells us, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mi Gila Lebanai Raz Zeh. Who revealed this secret to my children? And the Gemara goes on to say that Hashem was so impressed with the secret that we were able to intuit, that we were able to understand and to know, to say the words Nasa V'Nishma, that Malachi Asharis came down min Hashamayim, angels came down from heaven and placed two crowns on each of our heads, Echad Kineged Nasa, Ve'echad Kineged Nishma. We earned these glorious crowns because of Nasa V'Nishma. How exactly do two crowns fit on a head? I'm not sure. If it was front and back, side by side, that would look a little strange. I don't know. But two crowns, spiritual crowns, that we got on our heads because we said Nasa V'Nishma. But it's a little bit of a funny phrase because it doesn't seem like a great secret. It seems greatly irresponsible. No? Meaning, we didn't even know what we're getting into. Why would you go into something so important blindly? Right, if imagine a shidduch, right? So you have a child in shidduchim, and the child says, "I saw the person across the room. That's the person I'm going to spend the rest of my life with." Are they married? Are they, you know, like are they an axe murderer? Like, what do you know exactly? You wouldn't just go in blindly to something like that. You would need to know. You want to get to know the person, at least find out about the person. Even by a Hasidic shidduch, they find out about the person. The parents do their investigation, they do their research, and then they make the shidduch. They don't just go in blindly. It's crazy to go in blindly on an important thing. Something that's not that important, you know, sometimes people put a lot of effort into unimportant decisions, right? You ever been behind someone in like a bakery or, you know, a cafe, and it's like, wait, but does the carrot muffin, like, is it crunchy on the top? Or is it, like, it's not the biggest decision in your life. You know, you'll taste it. If you don't like it, next time you'll get something else. Right? Meaning that, but people sometimes put a lot of effort and a lot of energy into things that aren't important. But something that's going to be life-changing, something that's going to impact not just that generation of Kabbalah Satorah, but every generation thereafter, you would think it's irresponsible to say Nasa V'Nishma. It's irresponsible to say, we'll do it. Now tell me what it says. What are you talking about? Find out what it says before you commit to it. If we didn't know what we were getting into, it doesn't seem so heroic. Furthermore, Rashi comments about another section of the Parsha this week, which talks about an Eved Ivri. So the Eved Ivri at a certain point has the right to say, you know, I know that I'm supposed to go free after 6 years, but ahavti asishti, ahavti asadoni, I really like my setup over here. As an Eved Ivri, he's allowed to marry a Shivcha Kenanis, and he may enjoy her company, he may feel very connected to her, he's being taken care of, he's being fed, and he might say, you know, this is better than I've ever had it. You know, there are criminals that don't mind going to jail because what they say in the three hots and a cot, right? You get three hot meals and a bed to sleep on, and for many people, that's better than they ever had before. So a person is an Eved, and he's enjoying his life as an Eved. Ahavti as Ishti, ahavti as Adoni. I don't mind it so much. So what do? We pierce his ear. It's the right ear. It's on the cartilage part of the ear, which I imagine is more pain. I never had any ear piercings, as far as you know. It's on the cartilage part of the ear, not on the soft, fleshy part of the ear. On the right ear, and they pierce his ear by a doorpost. I don't know if if they anesthetize it first. I don't know if there's any, if they rub rubbing alcohol on it first to make sure that there are no infections. I don't know, it sounds much more crude than that, right? They just go next to the doorpost, they take a nail, bang, and they pierce his ear. And it's a strange procedure, right? We don't really do things like that too often in halacha. So Rashi famously comments from Chazal, Umar ra'a ozen lihiratza. Why did Hashem think it was appropriate that of all the things to get the Eved, to do to the Eved as he chooses to stay in Eved, to remain in that situation, Why the ear? Why would we pierce the ear? Mikol sharei varm shabaguf. You want to do a piercing? You want to do something on some part of his body? Why the ear? Why not give him a nose ring? Why not give him, you know, people are very creative now where they put rings. I've seen lip rings. I've seen chin rings, right? People can put rings in all parts of their bodies that they're, that they try. So why is it the ear? We're used to ears. We're used to earrings. So it seems humane to us, right? Because that's what we're used to seeing. But why did the Torah decide that, right? Why did the Torah decide it should be the ear? So I'm Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, Ozen Zos, Sheshamal Har Sinai, Kili B'nei Yisrael Avadim, V'halach V'kana Adon Le'atzmo Tirza. That this ear that heard on Har Sinai, Kili B'nei Yisrael Avadim, they heard on Har Sinai, every ear heard on Har Sinai, every Jew heard by Har Sinai, that we are supposed to be Avadim to Hashem, and that's it, only to Hashem. We are not Avadim to anybody else, and he's choosing to remain an Eved to somebody else, to someone other than the Ribbono Shel Olam. So because the ear sort of ignored the message that it received, so that's why there is a piercing of the ear. It's an interesting idea. You know, we think of avdus very often as a very negative thing. I don't want to be an evet to somebody. We emphasize the value of independence, the value of standing on our own, of not having to answer to anybody, of being our own boss, right? Things like that are phrases that sound empowering and they sound exciting. In Judaism, those are all good things, except for one relationship. There has to be a relationship of avdus. It's only one relationship of avdus, and there shouldn't be any other relationships of avdus, but the relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam is a relationship of avdus. I'm reminded of the story that someone, a psychiatrist, said to Rav Soloveitchik once, that he finds that the whole season of Aseret Yemei Tshuva is very troubling to him. That there's so much fear, right, that we're so fearful of Hashem, yiras Hashem, that we have this awe and trepidation that we're going. Fear is not a healthy emotion. He said, "I don't understand. Why would we promote people to feel to be so fearful and terrified? It's not a healthy emotion. It doesn't promote positive behavior." So Soloveitchik said, "No, you're missing something. When a person has yiras Hashem, all other fears in life go away. If a person has a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and a person knows that everything that happens in life comes about because of the Ribbono Shel Olam, then there is nothing else to fear. One doesn't fear all of the normal things that other people fear. Losing whatever it may be that they have in their lives, whether it be their parnasa, their house, their families, their job, whatever it might be that they have. You don't fear those things. The closer you feel connected to Hashem and realize that Hashem is putting you exactly where He wants you, and He's giving you a mission by each thing that happens, for good or for bad. Everything that happens in a person's life is a mission from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Then there is nothing else to fear. This is a fear that removes all other fears. And similarly, this Medrash is saying, this is an avdus that removes all other avdus. There's no such thing as being an Eved anymore to anybody, because you're an Eved Hashem. You work for the big boss, so you don't have to answer to the little boss. You're an Eved Hashem. And this ear didn't get that message, so the ear is going to be pierced. The question is, that lesson of Avdus, of the symbolism of that lesser Avdus, L'chora was present already at the outset. Meaning the person did something to get himself sold as an Eved. And therefore, he's been in Avdus for 6 years already. It's only 6 years later that we decide to give him this punishment? He already had put himself in a position to become an Eved. And also, the connection to Kabbalah Satorah requires further analysis. Granted, we have Mishpatim after Kabbalah Satorah to demonstrate that Af Elu Misinai, that even the monetary issues between different people, that also comes from Har Sinai. But of all Mishpatim, why would we start with an Eved Ivri? Of all of the different Mishpatim that we could have, how does that specifically relate to the experience of Nasa V'Nishmat Har Sinai? And a third question. There's a medrash that comes to mind as we approach Chodesh Adar, which is right around the corner. Rabbi Akiva Hayu Yoshe V'Doresh, says the medrash. Rabbi Akiva was giving a shir. Vatzibor misnamnim, and people were falling asleep. It even happened, you know, this is like comforting for a lot of rabbis. You know, even in Rabbi Akiva's shir, people were falling asleep. It happens to the best of them. I remember I was once with my father-in-law, who is a great guy. Everyone loves my father-in-law. And he had fallen asleep during the rabbi's speech. I don't think he really fell asleep. He just put his head down because he had a headache or something. He was listening. He hears every word anyway. But he was very close friends with the rabbi, so he can joke around with him afterwards. So he got up, and everyone looked at him and said, like, you have a giant red mark on your forehead. So my father-in-law went over to the rabbi and said, Rabbi, look what an impression your drasha made on me. Right? So Rabbi Akiva was darshaning. And he was, don't try that, by the way. Most rabbis do not take too kindly to that. But Rabbi Akiva was sitting in darshaning, and the Talmidim were misnamdim, they were falling asleep. Bikesh la'orran. So he wanted to wake them up. He wanted to excite them. So Amar, he said, you know what, let me say something a little bit different, something that will pique their interest. So he said, Ma rasa Esther, shetimlo chal sheva ve'esumu me'a medina. What caused Esther? What did Esther see that inspired her to become the queen over 127 provinces? Ela tavo Esther, she'isa bas bita shel Sara, she'chaisa kuf v'chaf v'zayin v'timloch ad kuf al kuf v'chaf v'zayin medinos. Esther realized that she's the descendant of Sara Imenu, and Sara Imenu chose to live for 127 years. So Esther said, if she made the choice to live for 127 years, I'm going to make the choice to rule over 127 provinces. Does that make sense? Does any of it make sense? Any part of the Medrash make sense? Did Sara choose to live for 127 years? Did Esther choose to rule over 127 provinces? None of it makes sense. What does it mean Esther chose to rule over 127? She was thrust into a position where she had to be ruling over 127 provinces. It wasn't a matter of choice. And certainly from a Sara perspective, it wasn't a matter of choice to live for 127 years. Right? She didn't say, oh, you know what would be really fun? If when I'm 127 years old, you shock me to death by telling me that my husband just slaughtered my son. She didn't choose that. That's something that happened. So these are the three questions we're going to start with. Again, question number one, what is the big secret of Nasa v'Nishma? It seems more irresponsible than heroic. Question number two, what exactly is the connection between the ear, Dafka, after 6 years of being an Eved, being punished for ignoring that you're supposed to be an Eved Hashem, and Kabbalah Satorah? And third, what is the story with this Medrash of Rabbi Kiva and that people were sleeping and that? What exactly is going on? Rav Huttner, Zichrono Livracha, the Rashi of Chaim Berlin, used to say that the worst avera in the entirety of the Torah is to be a Beinoni, which is quite a chiddush. To be a Beinoni. What's a Beinoni? A Beinoni is parav, average, you know, regular. To just be a regular person. A person has to always be on the move. A person has to always be striving for greatness. Life is a mountain and you need to keep on climbing. We never settle. We never assume that we have enough in Yiddishkeit. You know, how do you say, in Lashon HaKodesh, how do you say retirement? Right? There's no such word in Lashon HaKodesh for retirement. Okay, in modern Hebrew, I'm sure there's a word that they have that approximate. You know, in modern Hebrew, they come up with a word for anything that you need to refer to. You know, I remember when I was in Keren B'Yavne, the Rosh Shiva spoke to us. He only spoke Hebrew, so he was telling us, he says, Eich omrim ba'anglit psychologia. Like, you know, that is an English word, right? Meaning, there is no such thing as retirement in Judaism. Retirement from work, yes, because work, after all, is a curse, right? We have to remember that. It's a curse that God gave Adam that he has to work. So there is such a thing. But there's no such thing as like retirement from Yiddishkeit. There's not even such a thing as a vacation, right? A lot of times people will go on vacation and, you know, okay, so they wear a different outfit, but a lot of the Judaism changes. The way they daven changes, the way they learn changes, the way that, like, all of the Judaism just, like, goes by the wayside. We don't really have such a concept in Yiddishkeit. There never comes a point in a person's life where a person can say, okay, I've done enough, now I can take it easy. No need to accomplish anymore. You know, a group, this group of Rabbanim, I'm sure you've heard about it a few times, this trip that we take together, that Rav Shai leads, that he conceived of. So a couple of years ago, we went on this trip to Eretz Yisrael, a number of our Chaverim, and we met with Rav Beryl Wine. Rav Beryl Wine is still writing books, and he said it's a little harder now because he's pretty much blind. He cannot see. And he's still writing books. And he's still working each and every day. And he's still being productive. Because that's what a Jew does. A Jew is always productive. Rashi, at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, writes, Bikesh Yaakov leshev b'shalva, kafatz alav rogzo shel Yosef. That Yaakov had a thought to relax a little bit. And then the whole episode with Yosef happened. And Rashi says, this is indicative of the way Hashem runs the world. Tzadikim mevakshim leshev b'shalva, omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lo dayin letzadikim masha mesukam lehem li'olam haba, el shem mevakshim leshev b'shalva b'olam hazeh. A tzadik wants to take it easy, and Hashem says, not enough that you have eternity to take it easy? That you have olam haba to relax? You need to relax in this world as well? And like, it's striking, because like, what's the big sin about being Yosef b'shalva? People need to relax sometimes. What's so terrible about being Yosef b'shalva? And the message is, of course people need to relax sometimes to recharge, to then take on the next challenge. That's why we relax. We don't relax for the sake of relaxing. It's never the goal. The goal is to be in a mentally good space, to be healthy, to be strong, to be well rested, so that we can then accomplish. But if there's no so that, if there's no we're then going to accomplish, well then what are we doing? The time for resting eternally is l'achar me'av esrim, not while we're still alive. You know, I was talking to a colleague of mine who teaches in a high school and is also the rabbi of a shul. And he described the difference between the two jobs. He said in the school, there are kids that are like very rebellious. They're at a teenagers, they're at a stage in their life. There's tons of energy. Tons of movement. You know, people, they change like so drastically from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. Sometimes a kid's whole life will change around twice in one school year. Right? They're on such a journey. The challenge is take all that energy and channel it in the right direction. He said that in his shul, he sees there's no movement at all. People are settled in their lives. They are who they are. Nobody's growing, nobody's steiging, nobody's becoming great. The challenge is to try to light a little fire, to get people going, to want to do. And that's a much, much greater challenge. When the energy is there and just needs to be channeled, so a slight nudge in one direction and it takes off and shoots in that direction. When there's no energy and you need to start the cold car on a freezing morning, you know, it doesn't. You got to get the engine going. It doesn't start as easily. I once mentioned in a drasha before Ni'ilah that the Medrash asks, you know, the Medrash says Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, the Chumash says, Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai with Karnei Ahod, his face with a shining countenance. So the Medrash says, Mehecha Natal Moshe Karnei Ahod, where did Moshe Rabbeinu get this shine, this gleam on his face? And the Medrash gives three answers, but one of the answers is that after he finished writing the Torah, there was a little ink left in his quill, and he rubbed the ink on his face, and that gave him that glow, that unusual glow. Now, obviously, Midrashim speak metaphorically. They speak midrashically, right? Meaning the Midrash is not meant literally. It doesn't even make sense literally. For someone to take ink and rub it on their face, and all of a sudden, you know what your face would be if you took ink and rubbed it on your face? It would be dirty. It wouldn't be shining. It wouldn't be karnei ahod. But what the Midrash means, perhaps, is that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the most important book in all of human history. One would imagine that after you get to write God's autobiography, after you get to write the Torah, still to date, the best-selling book in all of history, more copies of the Bible have been sold than Harry Potter. Right? To date. You would think he would say, okay, I did it. I'm done now. No one's ever going to accomplish what I just accomplished. You know, now it's time to retire. Maybe what the Medrash is telling us is Moshe Rabbeinu looked in his quill and he saw there was a little ink left, or he looked in his inkwell and he saw there was a little ink left. There was a little energy left in him. And so long as there was a little bit of energy left, there was something to do. There was something to accomplish. Did he deserve a break? Maybe. But he utilized every last bit of potential that he had, symbolized by the ink, and applied it toward accomplishing more. And that's what sets Moshe Rabbeinu apart from the rest of us. There was no golf. There were no new hobbies to fill his time. Just continued growth. I mentioned it before in the Ne'ilah one year, because very often at the end of Yom Kippur, we feel drained. Fasting all day, davening all day, we already said all of our tefillos. And what's going to determine who comes out of Yom Kippur with a shine, with a bounce in their step, with a glow from the Yom HaKadosh V'Anora versus those who just are hungry and just run home to grab a bite to eat? And maybe what makes that difference is, how do you use that last bit of energy? Do you utilize that last bit of energy? And that's our avoda. As long as Hashem gives us air to breathe, as long as Hashem keeps us on this earth, we have a mission to accomplish, and we're supposed to be productive in that mission. So maybe that answers the questions that we started with. The secret of Nasa V'Nishma is that even after we do, even after we are Nasa, even after we accomplish, we still thirst for more. We come back and say, give me my next mission. What else can I do? I don't know if it's a true story. Maybe someone here can tell me if this is a true story, but I believe the story was told that when the mikveh here on Peninsula Boulevard was built many years ago, what was the family that built the mikveh that was involved? I forgot it. I mean, there were many families that contributed to it, but there was one primary mover in building the mikveh. So the person who was very involved in it, you know who it is? Remember? Schreiber, I think it was the Schreiber. I thought it was. I just didn't want to say if I was wrong. Okay, so the story goes, and again, maybe someone could confirm or deny, that he went to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and he's, you know, reported to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, I built the mikveh, the first mikveh on the south shore of Long Island, I'm guessing, I don't know, right? And the Rebbe said, oh, great, build 10 more. Okay, that was, meaning, you did it, good, that's step one. Now what's next? And that's always got to be the question. What's next? The secret of Nasa V'Nishma is Nasa, so what's my next mission? What else can I do? If there's a little bit of ink left in that ink well, I need to use that. The sin of the Eved is not only in becoming an Eved through his misdeeds. For that he gets punished by having to work for 6 years. At the end of the 6 years, the sin is that he is mishtalem with his matzav. He's okay with it. He's at peace with it. This is fine with me. He doesn't want anything more. He doesn't think, he doesn't learn how to dream, how to hope for more, how to look for more in his life. Ahavti es ishti va'adoni. He set such a low ceiling on his life as an Eved. He needed those 6 years of Avdus. Those 6 years of Avdus are so much better than our system of incarceration. Right, it really works. It's a rehabilitative kind of process that helps him get back on his feet, and that will put him back into society as a productive person. It works. It's great. But when he says, "Yeah, three hats and a cot," that's going to be me the rest of my life. I'm happy with that. Well, that's the greatest sin. That's Rav Huttner's greatest sin. You're going to be a benini your whole life. You're never going to try to accomplish. You're never going to try to grow more. There's no desire for growth. He's doing the opposite of Nasa V'Nishma. A person always has to be looking for growth. I remember Rabbi Eli Storch told me once that he was once very inspired by a lecture that he saw on YouTube. And he wasn't the only one inspired by this. Hundreds of millions of people were inspired by a lecture. It was called The Last Lecture. Familiar with The Last Lecture? There was a professor in Carnegie Mellon, which is in Pittsburgh, I believe, and he was diagnosed with a terminal illness, and he was told that he has 3 months to live or something like that, and he was still healthy enough energetic enough that he could still do things. So he decided he was going to take his bucket list, and he was going to go accomplish everything on his bucket list. And then he gave a lecture about how he did it. He always wanted to play in a rock concert. And somehow he managed to get on stage as, Metallica was playing or something. You know, he always wanted to get on the field in an NFL game. And somehow he, like, snuck on with a marching band or something. I don't know. But he figured out how to accomplish every last thing that he wanted to accomplish. And it was such an inspiring lecture, but the man died a month later or something like that. And he used, all that time that he had on earth to accomplish those things. So Rabbi Storch told me that he mentioned this to Rav Moshe Weinberger. And Rav Weinberger said, oh, that's so pathetic. That's so sad. And he said, what do you mean? It's inspiring. He said, his dreams as an adult were still to just be in a rock concert and to get on an NFL field. Meaning like, Rav Weinberger said, I gave up on being shortstop for the Yankees like a long time ago. You know, at a certain point, your dreams have to develop also. You have to strive for more. You have to look for different things, look for better things, look for greater things. And that is precisely the message of Esther in that medrash. She had accomplished a great deal in her life. She was a very righteous person under very trying circumstances. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave her a chance to do something more. She had a moment where she could have gone to the Melech to save the Jewish people, or she could have chickened out. So a lesser person might have said, all right, I did enough already. I'm not going to get myself killed on the off chance that I could accomplish something. But Ma Rasa Esther, what made Esther decide and gave her the courage to take advantage of her position to accomplish even more? Tavo Basbita Shel Sarah. Sarah lived for Kuf, V'chaf, V'zayin, and Chazal tell us, Bas Kuf, Kibas Chaf, L'chet. That Sarah used Shnei Chaye Sarah, what does Rashi say? Kulon Shavin L'tova. Doesn't mean she stayed the same. Kulon Shavin L'tova, she was accomplishing good things when she was 126 years old and a half years old, the same way she was accomplishing good things when she was younger. And Esther took that inspiration from Sarah to never stop. Every day is a new opportunity of Avodas Hashem. And I thought that that's the message of the Medrash. You know, the Medrash says that what was the context of Rabbi Akiva teaching this? Rabbi Akiva was saying Shir, and what was everyone doing? Sleeping. What was Rabbi Akiva trying to tell them? You have a chance here. Can you imagine if Rabbi Akiva walked in the door right now? Like, we wouldn't know what to do with ourselves. We would hang on his every word. I remember when I was in Morena Rav Shechter Shir in Yeshiva, as a Talmud, not Rav Shai Shechter, his father. So I remember, like, there were times that I was so tired. You know, college is hard sometimes. Tried to keep up with night seder also every night. And, you know, there were times that I was so tired. I mean, like, legitimately tired. Not like we always say I'm tired, right? That's like the number one thing that people tell you about themselves is that they're tired. I never understood that. But, like really tired. And like there were times that like, and Rosh Hashanah said shir in those days for 2 hours straight, every day. So there were times where, and it was fast. And sometimes like you figured like, oh, he's going off on a tangent for a minute now, I'll catch him when he comes back. And you didn't realize that that wasn't a tangent and he's not coming back. And now it's too late to catch him. And like, I'm not doing anything right now anyway because I'm not understanding anything that's going on. And like, you just want to, and I'd remind myself, I'm sitting in front of the Gadol Adar. How am I going to explain to my grandchildren that I fell asleep in front of the Gadol Adar? And that kept me up. That was my Rabbi Akiva moment. Once or twice, I had to walk outside, wash my face. It wasn't enough. Like, pinching myself wasn't enough. But you're sitting in front of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is saying, hello. You're here. I'm giving you eternity. Take advantage of every moment. You know, people work their entire lives to accomplish many different things. Retirees often have very difficult times psychologically dealing with the fact that they're no longer accomplishing anything. They're no longer climbing the corporate ladder. Whatever their goals were, they're no longer accomplishing those goals. But in Yiddishkeit, it's not like that. Because we just accomplish different and perhaps more important things. Instead of having to live through the curse that God gave Adam Arishon, we have the opportunity to learn more, to daven more, to accomplish more. And what we're supposed to do with every moment of life that Hashem gives us is to accomplish. And that's my first message. I don't know if we're going to have time for three. I underestimated my ability to stretch things out. But that's my first message. And it's something that, you know, we have too many sobering reminders of how life can change in an instant and how we don't know exactly how much time we have on this earth. And that each moment that we have on this earth is an incredible gift. And you can use every moment to do something spectacular, to do something great. You know, I was so moved, and I really can't get the image out of my head. So I think it was Rabbi Moskowitz, maybe it was Mrs. Moskowitz, said in the Hesped for their daughter Esti that she had gone through toward the end of her life, toward the very end, the last week or two, some sort of procedure that was going to disorient her. And they wanted to see if she was okay. And they wanted to see if she still recognized them. And they said, Esti, do you know who we are? And she turned to them and she said, yeah, your mommy, your daddy, don't worry, I'm okay. And those were the last words she ever spoke on this earth. She had a little bit left in that inkwell. She could have said anything or she could have said nothing. She'd been through a little kid, been through Gehenna already. She could have just left it. But that last bit of ink became Karnei Ahod. That last bit of ink is going to give chizik to her parents through Shiva, through Shloshim, for decades into the future. Because the last thing she ever told them is, I'm okay. And ultimately, that's what they wanted to hear, that's what they need to know. And as much as you tell it to yourself, it's so much more powerful when it came from her. We don't know how many moments we have, but the impact of a single moment can be enormous. Then there's another idea I wanted to share with you, also relating to Kabbalah Satorah. You know, the Torah warns us. There's an actual lo saseh in the Torah. The Rambam counts it as an actual lav in the Torah. Ki shomer lecha pen tishkach es hadvarim asher ra'u einecha. That you need to be careful not to forget that which your eyes saw. What did our eyes see? Kabbalah Satorah, Maimon Har Sinai. Don't forget it. A lav in the Rambam, the Ramban counts it as a lo saseh in the Torah. You're not allowed to forget Maimon Har Sinai. Now, it would seem a little bit odd that the expression used is Asher Ra'u Einecha. What was the primary element of Kabbalah Satorah? What was it? We said the phrase before. Nasa V'nishma. I would have said, Yishomer Lecha, Pen Tishkach Es HaDvarim Asher Shomu Aznecha. Meaning, after all, that's really what we connect to. On a day-to-day basis, we do mitzvos and ma'asim tovim. It's the Dvarim Asher Shamu Aznecha. And yet, the issue to forget is, don't forget the Dvarim Asher Ra'u Einecha. Furthermore, this whole idea of seeing and hearing seems to have been confused at Matan Torah. What was seen and what was heard? How seeing even worked and how hearing even worked at Matan Torah is a little bit confusing. The description of Matan Torah that we're told is that Klal Yisrael were ra'um es hakolos. They saw the voices. You remember, like on the old stereo systems, like you'd see when the noise would get louder, you'd see the bars go up, right? You see the kolos, but we don't see kolos. And the Medrash comments, yeah, so you ro'in es hanishma v'shomin es hanira. We were able to see that which is normally heard, and we heard that which is normally seen. I remember as a child hearing that saying, wow, what does that mean? What does it mean to see a voice? What does it mean to hear a sight? You know, it sounds spectacular, but I have no kalim to process what that means. I don't know how one sees a voice. I don't know what it means to hear a sight. What exactly is the Torah and the Medrash trying to express to us? The Nefesh HaChaim writes that even though we have many ways of perceiving things and of processing information, we tend to trust our sight more than anything else. For whatever reason, you heard something, oh, I heard in Shir, the rabbi said this. Are you sure he said that? I'm not so sure. Maybe I misheard it. Maybe I didn't hear it correctly. But when something we saw, I saw it with my own eyes. I'm sure. There's nothing that we take with as much certainty as that which we see. You know, you're blindfolded and you smell something. I think I know what this is. This is, you know, it smells like this kind of food. It smells like, and then you take the blindfold off. Ah! Now I know what it is. Why do you know what it is more when you see it than when you smell it? Because we trust our sight. That's just the way people are. We trust our sight much more than we do our other senses. Same is true for hearing. Chazal tell us, Rosh Hashanah Daf Chafei, lo teishmia gedola miri'iya. Meaning hearing something is never going to be as meaningful to us as seeing something. But we believe that true faith comes from that which we don't see. Ve'emunascha balelos. Emunah comes at night. Emunah comes when it's dark. Emunah comes when we can't see. That's the definition of emunah. That we know Hashem most. We are closest to Hashem. We feel His presence more when we don't see Him. Our obligation is to have emunah without seeing. Hashem can't be seen, but we have to believe in Him. We have to believe our traditions as if we saw them, even though we don't see them. Ki lo yirani ha'adam v'chai. A person is unable to see Hashem and live. Our very makeup as people with life and spirit suggests that there's more than meets the physical eye. People are much more than a pile of bones and skin and flesh and blood and whatever else makes up the human body. We know that we have a neshama. We know that we have a personality. We know, yeah, but what does the personality look like? Look like? It doesn't look like anything. But we know it's there. We are sure. We are more sure of our personalities than we are of how many toes we have on our feet. We are more sure because that's who we are. How many fingers I have in my hand, that's what I have. But who I am, my personality is who I am. My desires, my drives, my likes, my wants. That's the things I love, the things I despise. That's who I am. So our very identity carries with it the idea that most of what we are is something that cannot be seen. A neshama cannot be seen. The Sefer HaChinuch says that the basis for all belief is Kabbalas Habanim Me'avoseyem Dor Achar Dor Av Shadvarim Ne'alamim Mimare Einenu. The basis for all emunah in Yiddishkeit is children believing what their parents tell them about Maamar Sinai and Yetzias Mitzrayim, even though I didn't see it, and my parents didn't see it, and my grandparents didn't see it. And you know how many generations you have to go up till someone actually saw it? But that's what creates generations of ma'aminim. The Gemara Maseches Bava Basra tells a wild story. It tells us, Daf Ayin Hei, Ki Hadi Yosef Rabbi Yochanan V'Kadarish. Rabbi Yochanan was once saying shir. He was darshaning. Asar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lahavi Avanim Tovos and Margalios Shem Shloshim Al Shloshim, that Hashem is going to find, is going to bring these precious gems that are 30 amos by 30 amos. Right? All the colors in the picture with the, you know, after they get engaged. 30 amos by 30 amos. Right? You can't imagine. V'chokik b'am Esar Al Esrim, and it's going to be engraved 10 amos by 20 amos. Ma'amidon b'shari Yerushalayim. And these precious gems, imagine a diamond of that size makes the Hope diamond look like a little pebble. These diamonds are going to stand by the gates of Yerushalayim. And the Gemara says, Ligli galav osa Talmud. One of the Talmidim started to laugh. It's ridiculous. You know, there's never been a diamond that comes close to that. Hashta kebeosa tetziltzla. Lo mashkechinon, kule hai mashkechinon. Find me a diamond the size of an egg, and I'll tell you, you could retire, you know? You could sell it for whatever. A diamond the size of a shloshim al shloshim. Liyamim, some while later, hifligus finasu biyad. This Talmud was traveling somewhere. Chaza malachei ashares, and he saw malachei ashares, diyasvi v'kaminasvi avanim tovos margolios, shem lamed al lamed. And he was traveling somewhere in the Yam, and his, I guess his boat got lost somewhere. And he saw angels. He must have been in the Talmud at a pretty high level. He was Zocha to be able to see angels. And the angels were sitting there making an engraving on giant diamonds that were 30 amos by 30 amos. Amr Lahu, Hani Laman, he said to the Malachim, like, who's that for? You know, what kind of shidduch was this, right? Meaning, who are you preparing that diamond for? And the Malachim said, oh, these are the diamonds that are going to stand by the gates of Yerushalayim. Asal kamed Rabbi Yochanan, they came to Rabbi Yochanan. The Talmud came back to Rabbi Yochanan. After his trip, he came back from winter vacation. Rebbe, you're not going to believe what I saw. I know I made fun of you. I know I mocked it. I believe you now. He said, I see that l'cha na lidrosh. You knew how to darshan kasher marta kein reisi. Like you said it, I saw it. Amar lo reka. He said, you empty one. Il mali reisa lohe amanta. Without seeing it, you wouldn't believe it? Malaglig of divrei chachamim. You're mocking the divrei chachamim. Nasan eino bo v'nasa gal shalatzamos. Rabbi Yochanan looked at him and turned him into a pile of bones. Now again, this is Nagarat HaGemara, this is Midrashic. It's not, none of it is meant to be taken literally. The diamond isn't a diamond, the angel's not an angel, the boat's not a boat, the sea's not a sea, the pile of bones is not a pile of bones. Right, it's all metaphorical. That's the way we're supposed to learn Agarata. But you have to figure out, why would you speak in such terms? First you have to figure out what the message is, and then why would it speak in such terms? So even just the way the story is told, why didn't he punish him when he mocked him at first? When was he melagleg al divrei chachamim? He was melagleg al divrei chachamim when Rabbi Yochanan said the original shir, and the guy was cracking up in the back. He should have said, what's so funny? You think this can happen? This is what the Chum said. It's only after the guy reports back and he agreed and he admitted and he said, I saw it, I know that you were right. He's doing tshuva now. Now you turn him into a pile of bones. But the sin was not in making fun of the shir. It was in demonstrating that he insisted on seeing it with his own eyes. That if I don't see it, it doesn't exist. And as soon as I see it, then it exists. This guy had reached high levels. He saw angels. But his belief was only as great as his ability to see. The punishment is mida keneged mida. Because what are we if we're made up of only that which you can see? We're a pile of bones. We're a bunch of flesh and bones and blood. I can't see my personality. I can't see my wants and desires and likes and dislikes. I can't see any of those things. If you think something that you can't see doesn't exist, you are nothing more than a gal shalatzamos, than a pile of bones. The Gemara in Brachos, Daf Nun Ches, tells us another story. Rav Sheshes Sagi Nor Hava is, I think, a more well-known story. Rav Sheshes was blind. People don't like the first story because someone turns into, you know, a nice little boy turns into a pile of bones. No one likes that story. But you have to know that it's metaphorical. Second story, people like a little better because it's an enemy of the Jews that turns into a pile of bones, and we're happy with that. Right? So the story goes like this. Rav Sheshes was blind, and everyone came to greet the king that was coming. The king was coming through town. Come, Vazl Badai. Rav Sheshes Ashkei Hut Tzduki. A certain Tzduki, an enemy of Torah Shebal Peh, came and met Rav Sheshes. And the Tzduki said, what are you doing? You're going to greet the king? You're not even going to see when the king comes. You're not going to know when the king is there. So Rav Sheshes said, I'm going to know better than you when the king is there. You're not going to be able to see over the people in front of you. The tall guy in the front is going to block you. And why did you choose to wear that hat on this day when you need to see past him? But I'm going to know. I'm going to know. So the Gemara says that there was a commotion. Ka'avsha, there was a noise. Amaleu Tzduki Asamalka. The Tzduki says, the king must be coming. Amaleu Rav Sheshes Lo Ka'asi. King's not here. Chol of Gunda Kameisa. Ki Ka'avsha. Another troop came and it got noisy. Amaleu Tzduki, now it must be. Have you ever been at a wedding and like the music, like, the Chasan Kala are about to come in, right? The music started. Fake out. Still in pictures. So Asamalka, the king is coming. Amalei Rav Sheshes, Lo Ka'asi, king's not coming. Chol of Kunta Tinyana, another group came. Again, noise. The Tzduki says, Hashta Asi. No, he's not here. Kept on happening. And then all of a sudden there was Kikashaska. There was quiet. Amalei Rav Sheshes, Vadai, Hashta Asi Malka. He says, the king is here now. So Amalei Tzduki, Minalacha, how would you know? Because kingdoms work down here in a way that replicates or imitates the way the kingdom in Shemayim works. and Malchusa Terukia Duchsiv Tseva Mata Bahar Lefnei Hashem Vinei Hashem Over Veruach Kedola V'Chazak Mifarei Karimu Meshaber Slaim, these heavy winds that are going to break rocks and uproot mountains Lefnei Hashem Lo Beruach Hashem Vachar Ruach Rash Lo Berash Hashem Vachar Rash Eish Lo Be'esh Hashem. Hashem is not in the Ruach, He's not in the Rash, He's not in the Eish. Vachra Eish Kol Demama Daka. Hashem is in those silent moments. In those moments where you hear nothing. Not in the moments of where there are impressive things going on. Not in the things that capture your attention. In those quiet, private moments. The tzduki, even after the story, was still being combative. And the Gemara says two alternate endings to what happened to the tzduki at the end of the story. The tzduki, you know, when the king came, Rav Sheshes made a bracha. You make a bracha when you see a king. So the tzduki said, what, someone who doesn't see is going to make a bracha? So my havi alei dahut tzduki, what happened to that tzduki? Ika da amri chavroi kachlinu leninayu. Some say that his colleagues knocked out his eyes, so he became blind himself. Vikadamri Rav Sheshes Nasan Boena Vaso Gal Shalatzamos. And others say Rav Sheshes placed his eyes on him and he turned him into a pile of bones. Again, the pile of bones. What is the symbolism of the pile of bones? Rav Sheshes couldn't see, but Rav Sheshes knew. The tzduki, who wouldn't get the message, was punished mida keneged mida. Because it's not about what you can see. Emunah comes when you can't see. So let's go back to our questions. Seeing the voices, what does that even mean? It means that the belief was so great that the lines were blurred between seeing and hearing. That which we normally hear and don't believe 100%. Spiritual things, which we kind of believe, but it's not like we see it. But on that day, the Emunah was so strong, it was as if we had seen it. That which we normally see and we take for granted and we think are an absolute, a metzius. We think it's reality. Physical things, as real as this shtender in front of me, as real as this, things that I can put my hands on, things that I can touch, I can know they exist, seemed much less clear at the time. The entire physical world at Maimed Har Sinai turned from Re'iyah into Shmiyah, turned from the definition of our reality into something that I'm not as certain about, that I hear correctly. But that which we normally question, that which we normally think, this isn't, I can't be sure about this. Do I really know that Hashem is there? Do I really know that Hashem loves me? Do I really believe in Schar V'Onesh? Things that we tend not to be as certain about. In that time, in that place, at Maimed Har Sinai, it was a Re'iyah. Things that were normally just a shmiyah became a re'iyah, became something that we were able to see. And the mitzvah is, according to the Rabban, he shamar lecha pentishkach es hadvarim asher ra'u einecha. Don't forget that clarity of vision. At Har Sinai, the things that you saw are things that you normally only hear. The things that you were certain about are things that sometimes we're not as certain about. And that is the definition of Emunah. That's how we define a ma'amin. And again, just because my mind can't escape that place. You know, sometimes public figures, and in the Jewish community, public figures are very often rabbis and rabbitsons. So sometimes public figures teach us the way they're supposed to normally teach. They give shiurim, they teach Torah, they have conversations with us. And sometimes public figures teach us by the way that they behave, by the way they act, and the way they deal with challenges, the way they deal with those moments of kol demama daka, of times where spectacular things aren't happening. Times of intense privacy. Times of things that are happening within a family. that generally aren't meant to be public. And if you, you know, it will ruin your day, your week, maybe more, if you do it, but I would still recommend, it's on YouTube, go watch the Levaya of Esti Moskowitz. It's the best mussar that you'll ever get, I think. To see the dignity of the struggle that someone could say after losing a child, I don't understand, I will never understand. And I've come to grips with that. I will never understand. But the belief in Hashem is unwavering. The Emunah is not shattered a single bit. Because the Emunah is not built on that which we see. The Emunah does not depend on good things keeping on happening to us. You know, so many times when people struggle and bad things happen, we say, well, where's Hashem? Why is this? And we don't ask that when good things happen. Why is Hashem doing this for me? Because it's not about what happens. Our knowledge of Hashem is like our knowledge of ourselves. It's like our knowledge of our neshama. Our neshama is a chelik elokam imal. As sure as I am that my neshama exists, as sure as I am that I exist, I'm that sure that Hashem exists. That's the level of Maimon Har Sinai. That's the level that these heroic parents and family, and really the entire community in Boca Raton, taught us. So there's a third message also, but I see that I'm out of time with the third message. Bez Hashem, od chazon l'moed, that we should have other opportunities to share Torah together. We should be mechazik each other. And we should always be able to experience the kolos of Har Sinai and to be roe those kolos, to be able to see them with the utmost clarity and use that as the mission, as something that drives us in the mission to accomplish with every moment in life. Every breath that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, each moment is a gift, and each moment can be utilized to make a tremendous impact on those around us and on the world. Everyone have a wonderful day.